everybody. Thank you for joining us for this call. It's been 6 months now since passage of the 2014 Farm Bill, and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack is here to give an update on Farm Bill implementation progress. And as usual, reporters, if you'd like to ask a question of the Secretary, just press star 1 on your touchtone pad to let us know that. We're going to first start off with the Secretary giving a brief opening statement, and then we'll go to questions. But first, Mr. Secretary, good morning.
Good morning, Susan. Thanks for joining today. Looking forward to an opportunity to sort of outline precisely what we've been able to do in the last 6 months since the President signed the Farm Bill. For those who want more detailed information, they can take a look at our Farm Bill implementation webpage at usda.gov/farmbill. I want to just focus very briefly on 10 significant steps that have been taken in this last 6 months, and obviously there's a great deal more work yet to be done. But I'm very proud of the work that's been done by the team at USDA. Let me start with the disaster assistance payments that we've made to date. As of close of business on July 31st, we had processed and received over 165,000 disaster assistance applications for which payment was made. $1.85 billion in payments had been paid out by July 31st to those 165,000 producers. There's still quite a few applications that have to be reviewed, but we are processing them very, very quickly, and it is fairly clear that we will obviously exceed the $2 billion mark in terms of disaster assistance. We've recently received a substantial interest in our Regional Conservation Partnership Program that we launched several months ago. We received 586 initial proposals. We've asked 229 of those proposals to submit more detailed information so that we'd be in a position in September to begin making decisions about which of the Regional Conservation Partnership programs will receive assistance and resources for 2014-2015. We've established the Research Foundation established under the Farm Bill and have named the initial 15-member board. And we'll be setting up a meeting very shortly of that board to begin the process of adopting bylaws and moving forward in terms of getting this thing set up. We have reinstated our market assistance programs in terms of export assistance. We have also recently launched our specialty crop block grant program as well as the organic research initiative. We've fully funded and paid out and identified projects totaling $150 million in grants for water and wastewater disposal under our loan and grant program. We've begun a significant number of steps in terms of crop insurance, not the least of which is continuing work and finalizing work on our whole farm policy, which will be very important, especially to small and mid-sized operators. We've also begun the process of getting resources out to land-grant universities and others who will be formulating the education materials and web-based modeling tools that producers will use to make determinations about ARC and PLC, as well as the dairy program that has to be launched this fall. We've also obviously done a lot of work in terms of getting the STAX program, the SCO program, available as well. And finally, we've been able to already announce over $48 million in loan guarantees for local food projects through the Rural Development's Business and Industry Guaranteed Loan Program concerning the set-aside that was established under the Farm Bill. So there's been a great deal of activity and action. I just finished a briefing on the dairy program. It took 45 minutes for the team to outline a number of decisions that had to be made in terms of putting this dairy program together, and it just further impressed upon me the number of decisions, the amount of work that is required in the institution and implementation of each one of these programs. It is complicated, and it's difficult, and we want to make sure that we get it right, but we also want to make sure that we're getting it done. And I think at this six-month period, compared to previous farm bills, I think there's been very good, positive work. With that, I'll be glad to take questions.
All righty, reporters, if you want to ask questions of the Secretary, please let us know by pressing star 1 on your touchtone pad. I want to start up, Mr. Secretary, and ask you, I'm sure that there, with all of these new programs that are being implemented, where do the farmers and ranchers go to get help?
Well, several places, Susan. Obviously, the webpage and the the USDA webpage is one place for them to get information at USDA.gov/farmbill. This will give them information, basic information about what's been launched and where things are. Obviously, depending upon the program, they may be able to talk to their local NRCS folks in the county, or the local FSA office might be able to provide information and assistance. We're obviously equipping and training. Part of the implementation is not only getting the rules and regulations and OMB approvals and apportionments and so forth that we have to get through the process, but it's also making sure that the folks on the ground in the literally hundreds of offices across the United States that will be dealing with questions and concerns that folks have, being able to make sure that they're adequately trained and properly trained in the development of these new programs and in the improvements that are being made to existing programs. What's important to note is that there is, we obviously have had staff reductions over a period of time at USDA, and our operating budgets have been cut. So we are asking folks to really, in some cases, do double duty, and the folks here in the D.C. office who have been working on the rules and regulations, many of these people in the General Counsel's office, in the Office of Budget and Policy, and in the individual mission areas have been working late at night on the weekends to be able to move the process as far forward as it has been moved. And I think if you compare this to previous farm bills, there's been a significant amount of activity that's taken place, and we're obviously going to be prepared for a great deal of action and activity this fall as we implement some of the new safety net programs.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. First, from Inside U.S. Trade, is Ryan Rainey.
Thank you, Secretary Vilsack, for doing this call. My understanding is today is the deadline for your office to submit to Congress a report on the reorganization of USDA's international trade functions. I wanted to know if this report has been completed, and if so, what are some of the proposals you've put forward, and if not, when will the report be done? Thank you.
This is a very complicated question, and I'm glad you asked it. This doesn't involve simply indicating to Congress whether this is a good idea or a bad idea. It also involves basically how you would implement the development of an undersecretary's position. There are a number of mission areas that are involved in trade. Our Animal Plant Health Inspection Service is involved. Obviously, the Foreign Ag Service is involved. There are issues involving potentially the Chief Economist's Office. There are other mission areas that are engaged and involved in a variety of different aspects of this. And it's important, I think, for us to really, really think about this and to be able to make sure that as we propose and move forward, we have thought through all of the ramifications. We have made sure we've considered all the jurisdictional issues and make sure that we are in the best position to structure USDA to provide help and assistance. APHIS is a great example. They clearly have a foreign trade responsibility. Literally every year, hundreds of problems crop up in terms of shipments and so forth. But they also have a very significant domestic responsibility. Do you divide APHIS? Do you move APHIS into the Foreign Ag and Undersecretary's position? I mean, these are all decisions that have to be made. So, honestly, I don't know whether the report itself is prepared, but I do know that we've had a number of meetings on this issue. We're going to continue to talk through the various implementation issues so that when we're in a position to move forward, we'll have well thought out all of the complexities of this.
Next on the line from Congressional Quarterly, it's Philip Brasher. Phil.
Yes, Secretary. I wanted to ask you about the APH provision that Conaway and Lucas, I think, have raised with you, where some of the farmers that have been had series of drought, mm-hmm. years of drought, would be allowed to drop out some of those years. He has been pushing you to do this on at least a regional basis or maybe a single crop. What? When do you expect to get this implemented? And wonder if you have concerns about this provision and concerns about the precedent.
It's not a situation of concerns, Philip. This is a situation, as I explained to Chairman Lucas on a couple of occasions. the same people in the General Counsel's office, the same people in the Office of Budget Management, the same people in the Farm Service Agency offices are essentially involved in making decisions not just about this aspect of the safety net, but also about implementation of stacks, implementation of SCO, implementation of ARC, PLC, and some of the other steps that have already been taken. And as we explained to the chairman, we had a choice to make in terms of allocating assets and directing assets in terms of trying to get work done that was mandated by Congress to get it done within a certain period of time. We had to make a choice, and we did the best we could under the circumstances because we felt important to move forward on stacks, important to move forward on SCO, and very important to move forward on ARC and PLC. So it was a staffing issue. It just comes down to that. The reason it's complex and the reason why it takes a lot of staff time is that it requires individual computations based on commodity and based on county. So each individual county that's engaged and involved in this, you have to make separate calculations. So it's very, very IT intense and very labor and staff intense. We indicated to the chairman that we would be in a position to obviously have this done for the 2000 crop year, with the understanding that we would work on this as quickly as we possibly could. As soon as we move forward on all of these other priority areas, we will certainly take a look at trying to do what we can. I don't know how feasible it is for an individual crop or an individual set of counties to be designated. I think you get into some issues in terms of, well, what if you have a multitude of producers in one county, but you've only got a handful of producers in the next county that may have been impacted by this? Is it fair? How do you basically draw the line? Those are decisions that have to be made if you're going to basically single out counties or commodities. We obviously want to work with the chairman. We understand how important it is to his producers, but it really is just a matter of if we'd done APH, then we wouldn't have been able to do stacks or SCO, and I suspect that the chairman would then be complaining about the fact we hadn't gotten stacks and SCO done. So it's really just about prioritization.
Next up is Bill Thompson from Politico. Bill?
Hi, Mr. Secretary. Sorry, I had it on mute. How widely will SCO be available for wheat farmers this year? Will it be 100%? I've heard that it won't.
Bill, I think we've put together a map of the counties, and we'll get that to you, which will indicate the extent to which it's available. I don't know that it's 100%, but we obviously have to do this in a way that is actuarially justified and actuarially sound and appropriate. And our folks at RMA have done the best they can to try to make sure that they have a map that is covering as many producers as is appropriate.
Up next, Tiffany Stecker with Greenwire.
Hi, Secretary. Thanks for taking my question. I have two, if that's okay. The first is on the implementation and the funding of BCAP. There were some concerns a couple months ago when, most half of the funding is going to collection and storage of agricultural residues. Some are worried there's not enough support given to, incentivize perennial crops for fuels. I'm wondering if this, the official blend from FSA is that it's because of the short, period that it can be implemented this year because the Farm Bill was signed so late. In the coming years, are you committed to maybe putting more of your resources in incentivizing perennial biomass crops?
Well, the BCAP program is currently operating in I think 11 states, 12 projects, 53,000 acres, and that has been pretty much the demand. Congress did indicate and direct us to also use some of that assistance to deal with the challenges that we face with our forests and making sure that we properly restore and make them more resilient. So a portion of the resources will be going to the collection and handling of woody biomass, which we think has great potential as well. You know, obviously we are operating on sort of all the above strategy in terms of biofuels and energy, renewable energy production. We're looking at all aspects of this, trying to be supportive as best we can, whether it's through BCAP, whether it's through the 25 research projects that are currently underway, whether it's the work of the biofuel hubs that are looking at feedstock availability in the supply chain, whether it's additional work that we're doing with the Department of Energy, whether it's the work we have with the Department of Defense in terms of drop-in aviation fuel, and expanded opportunities in terms of them buying blended fuel, all of which is looking at a wide variety of non-food feedstocks. So this has been a comprehensive commitment, and we're doing the best we can with the resources that Congress is providing. But it was fairly clear that Congress was also interested in us making sure that woody biomass was included, and we just recently announced the availability of those resources for the woody biomass.
Up next, Ron Hayes with Radio Oklahoma Network. Ron. You still there? I think we may have lost Ron. Okay, let's go, Mr. Secretary, to Matt Kay from Burns Bureau.
Yeah, Mr. Secretary, a couple of other concerns that came up at that July subcommittee hearing on Farm Bill implementation. Chairman Conaway mentioned conservation compliance. What is your assessment now of whether producers will have enough time to meet conservation compliance requirements next year in order to avoid losing subsidies the following year? And also the rollout of the dairy margin insurance program. There was some concern by Colin Peterson that that wasn't being well advertised. Many producers weren't aware of it, and that much more needed to be done to get the word out about the program.
Well, let me speak to the dairy issue first. You know, obviously at this point in time, if the program were in place, no one would be utilizing it because dairy prices are pretty strong and feed costs have come down a bit. They aren't anywhere near where that program would be triggered. I think producers are going to have a substantial amount of time to make decisions in terms of 2014-2015. Obviously, we felt the most important thing in terms of information was to allocate the resources to the universities and our partners to be able to put together the web-based tools and the modeling tools and the information, which will result, I suspect, in a number of seminars, conferences, and alike that where folks will be able to get adequate information, have adequate time to make those decisions. So for 2014, it's not likely that program is actually going to be triggered. Obviously, folks have to make a determination for 2015, but they have several months in which to do it, and I'm confident that they're going to have the information they need to be able to make an informed decision. In terms of conservation compliance, I am confident that we're going to give folks plenty of time to make decisions. They have to have their plan sort of in place by July of next year. That should give them adequate resources and adequate time. You know, the reality is that a substantial majority of producers already are operating under some kind of compliance requirement. I think the new rule, I've been told, will impact and affect potentially just several thousand producers in terms of getting their plan in order. What is of concern to us on this issue, and what it ought to be concern to everyone, is making sure that every producer understands that even if they have a plan in place, they still have to fill out a form and be able to submit that form on a timely basis. And so we're making sure that we're going to get information out to the media about that compliance requirement, that reporting requirement. We don't want anybody falling through the cracks because they didn't know that they had to file the form, they had to sort of re-up, if you will. So it's not about getting the plan in place, it's really about making sure the forms are filed. And we're going to make sure that we get information out in a variety of different venues whether it's through farm magazines and publications, through organizations, whether it's our own web page, whether it's in county offices, making sure that folks are reminded. But that's the key issue here now with compliance, is making sure everybody signs up.
Let's go to Greg Martin with Northwest Ag Information Network. Greg.
Guys, the voice is starting to go a little bit today. So wanted to get your update on the UGC terminal, the grain inspection out here in Washington State regarding the safety issues or perhaps crossing picket lines and that kind of thing.
Well, as you know, the Washington state inspectors have basically been pulled because of safety concerns. I think it's incumbent upon me to make sure that any decision we make relative to inspectors is done with the safety of those inspectors in mind. I will tell you, I'm a little concerned about the fact that Washington State's made this decision in terms of why they made it. They must obviously conclude that the conditions aren't as safe as they need to be. And that's the primary concern that I obviously have for the folks who work. I know that that there is increased traffic in a number of other ports where this is not an issue. Hopefully this gets worked out and we're not going to be confronted with putting folks in an unsafe circumstance and condition.
Up next, Jerry Hagstrom with the Hagstrom Report. Jerry.
Good afternoon, or good morning, Mr. Secretary. Just two quick questions. When did you say that you actually expect to have this update of actual production history in place? And also on this report to the Congress on the trades undersecretary position, do you have an estimate of when you actually will be able to submit that report?
Jerry, I don't have an estimate on the report, but I will tell you that I'm not going to submit it until I'm confident that we have really thought through all of the aspects of this. You know, this is this when you reorganize and restructure anything having to do with USDA and the mission areas, you have a whole series of complexities that may not be at first blush aware. Folks may not be aware. There are labor issues, labor contract issues. There are consultation requirements. I mean, there's a series of steps that have to go through, and I want to make sure that the team has thought through all of the steps, that we've thought through all the mission areas, all the jurisdictional issues that are involved here. This is not as simple as it may appear at first blush. And so we're going to do it right, and we're going to do it in a careful and thoughtful way. And if it takes a little bit longer, so be it, but when we do it, it's going to be done well and it's going to be done right. In terms of the APH, we have indicated to the chairman that we will be prepared to have this in place for the 2016 crop year. That's still the belief and goal that will be met. If we end up being able to do work that we had anticipated in terms of priority more quickly than we expected, we'll obviously turn our attention fully and completely to doing the APH as quickly as we possibly can. But again, I want to emphasize this is not a situation where it's just one calculation being done in Washington, D.C. This is basically every county that could be impacted, every commodity that could be impacted requires you to go back in time to take a look at historical data and information. It's an IT challenge, it's a staffing challenge, and it's about priorities. And the reality is, I will stack up what we've done in the first 6 months of this farm bill with any other implementation of any other farm bill in terms of the amount of work that's been done and the speed with which it's been done and the comprehensive nature in which it's been done. And I appreciate the concern of the chairman. I think he's obviously concerned for his producers, as he should be, but he would be equally concerned about all of America's producers if we were not fully forward, moving forward on ARC and PLC and the SCO and the STAC that also STAC's program that also involve many, many, many producers. So it's just a matter of trying to get the work done in an orderly and thoughtful fashion and trying to get as much done for as many people as we possibly can, and I think we're accomplishing that.
We have time for just a few more calls. David Pitt with the Associated Press. David?
Yes, Mr. Secretary. I was hoping you would comment a bit on the growing season this year and the prospects of a record harvest and prices that may for many be below the cost of production. If you could comment on, you know, the preparation perhaps in the system to, you know, help farmers get through this growing season with, you know, revenue protection products, everything in order to get through this season with those dynamics in place.
Well, week to week, things change. Last week, the crop was 75. The corn crop was 75% excellent today. I think it's 72%. You know, a weather situation may occur in the month of August that impacts and affects what the ultimate crop will be. Obviously, we are anticipating a very good crop, a very solid crop, which is obviously different than where we've been the last couple of years, where the concern was the shortage of crops. You know, it's about balance. It's about making sure that all producers are able to proceed and to profit. Obviously, the livestock producers have had a tough time the last couple of years, and now things are a bit easier for them. In terms of the programs, that's precisely the reason why we are giving this call today, to let folks know that we have moved forward very aggressively on expansion of crop insurance, on making sure that the supplemental crop insurance option is going to be available for folks to consider, on making sure that they're fully aware of what counties are going to be covered under this SCO, this tax program as well. We've also put out the $6 million to the universities and other partners who are putting together the web-based information and education tools that will allow producers this fall to have adequate time and adequate resources and multiple ways to calculate what will be best for them as they make a very important decision in terms of ARC and PLC. You know, prices will fluctuate. Our job is to make sure that we're in a position to handle all contingencies. And I think our rapid progress in the last 6 months on the Farm Bill has put producers in a better position than they would have been in previous Farm Bill implementations. And I think that's the goal. Still work, obviously, to be done, and we're going to do it in an orderly and thoughtful fashion.
We've got Ed Felker from Energy Guardian. Ed?
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Secretary. Agriculture Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow and 12 Democratic colleagues wrote to you and the EPA and the Corps about the waters of the U.S. rule, and they're raising concerns they're hearing from farmers and ranchers. I know the comment period doesn't allow you to get into where you think this might go, but are their concerns, are they reflecting valid concerns, and is the outreach effort yet to get your message across on this? Thanks.
Well, I know that the administrator, McCarthy, has been out and about talking to farmers and producers across the country in an effort to try to reassure farmers and producers that this Waters of the U.S. rule was not designed to extend significantly the jurisdiction of EPA. It wasn't designed to interfere with normal farming practices, and the intent on EPA's part was to try to provide greater clarity and certainty. I think the administrator's indicated the concern as she's heard the same comments that you've alluded to, and I'm sure they're taking all of that into consideration seriously, which is why you have a comment period, which is why you've got a process in place to give people the ability to express their concerns. I think it's important to understand that the intent that EPA had when the rule was filed was to provide clarity and was to provide greater certainty for producers. Obviously there's still work to be done in terms of educating people about that intent, because that's not how it's been interpreted. I think the reason that they put 53 conservation practices out there was to reassure producers that if they were engaged in normal conservation practices, that they weren't going to have to get a permit, they weren't going to have to provide notice, they weren't going to have to go through the process. It was really designed to provide greater certainty. So still work to be done, and that's why you've got a comment period, and that's why you've got a regulatory system in place that will allow the EPA to take all of that into consideration and do what they think is best, and I'm confident that the administrator has made a good faith effort in listening to people and making sure that she's been out. She's been visiting farms. She's been talking to farmers, and I very much appreciate the fact she's been doing that kind of outreach.
As we wrap this up, Mr. Secretary, any last words?
I don't think so. I just really, obviously a great deal of work has been done. There's a much more extensive briefing that I think covers six pages of specific steps that have been taken. Over 120 different decisions have been made, and steps have been taken for implementation. We've submitted 9 reports to Congress. We've had 34 announcements of funding availability. 40 administrative actions have been released in terms of policy memorandums and managers' bulletins and announcements. So a lot of work has gone into putting in place all of these programs. Obviously, still more work to do, but I'm pleased with the progress that we've made, and we're going to continue to work every single day to make sure that we're doing what we need to do to carry out this very historic and important farm bill that creates an historic opportunity for new partnerships to support innovation and to make sure that we have a strong, solid safety net in place for producers.
And with that, everybody, thank you, and that concludes this call.